The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Film Weekly with me, Jason Solomons. This week we're at St Pancras International, heading to the north of England, to the mighty city of Sheffield. Once synonymous with stainless steel, knives and spoons, now Sheffield is a byword for the best in international documentary making. The full Monty of the Sheffield Documentary Fest is our destination, and we thought we'd take you along.
Due to today's wet weather, please take extra care whilst on the station. Surfaces may be slippery.
Maybe slippery surfaces here at Sheffield's station, but we're going to wend our way down to the Sheffield International Documentary Film Festival, navigating our way through the many screenings, Q&As, workshops and general hubbub. For this special edition of Film Weekly, we'll be meeting up with young filmmaker Jeannie Finlay to find out about her doc, Sound It Out, a touching and funny portrayal of the very last vinyl record shop in another great area of the North, Teesside. I'll also be meeting a big hitter in the doc world, Morgan Spurlock, to discuss his connection with this festival and find out a little bit more about his latest project, The Greatest Movie Ever Sold. And speaking of selling, our first stop is at Sheffield's Meat Market, a documentary market. What does a documentary market sound like? Let's find out.
Hello, welcome to Sheffield DocFest. I'm Charlie Phillips. I'm the marketplace director here, and this is what a documentary market sounds like.
There's a general hubbub going on, Charlie. I imagine of like earnest documentary makers discussing global issues and how they're going to solve it through the medium of documentary. Am I wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. This year in particular, we've got a lot of docs on subjects of social justice and political action. And in the market in particular, there's a lot of people trying to get funding for those kind of ideas.
So who's going to be here? Who's in the market? Who can we see around? We've got executives, have we? We've got funders. We've got people literally with bulging checkbooks.
Yeah, that's the idea. We've got lots of television commissioners. We've got national film funders like the BFI and the Norwegian Film Institute. So kind of national film funds. There's transnational grant foundations like Tribeca Film Institute, Sundance Institute, and of course the Ford Foundation, who have a lot of money for documentaries, and they're bankrolled by Ford, which is, you know, a good way for a company like that to give something back.
Those documentaries are yet to be made, and of course the other side of the festival is screening documentaries that have made. Where will these films end up? It sounds from what you're listening, BFI, Tribeca, there is lots of opportunity to screen these films, because that's important really. It's all very well making a film, if you're not showing it, it doesn't really exist.
Yeah, there's definitely increasing opportunities, because for documentary it's often been about television, and television still has a role, but there's been a big rise in the number of docs being released at the cinema in the UK, and certainly across the rest of Europe, and very much in the US and Canada. There's been a massive rise in theatrical releasing for docs. And then, of course, there's internet distribution as well, which is working gradually, I think.
Last year, the figure given was that the meat market here at Sheffield injected £20 million into documentary making. Mm. I mean, it's an enormous yeah. figure. Is that true? Is that what you're going for again this year? Is there that much money around to get these subjects off the ground?
Yeah, there is. I mean, that figure is the meat market, and then all the other deals that are being done in Sheffield outside of the meat market. And, you know, that genuinely is what people were investing. And I think we'll probably even top that this year, because we've got more people here, we've got more people with money, we've got even more amazing filmmakers pitching. So I'm pretty confident that we'll top it.
Where's that money coming from? You say national funds and stuff, but we're going to meet Morgan Spurlock a bit later. His film is kind of a sponsored documentary. It's about product placement. Are increasingly documentary makers being forced in this economic climate to look for creative ways of funding, or are the traditional pots still there?
No, very much so. Like I say, it's often been about television, and television money is declining. So people are going through routes like crowdfunding, for example, which is going out to your community and your fans and your followers and getting them to put some money in. And of course, Morgan went very much the brand and the private company route, which, you know, not to quite as much a dramatic extent a lot of people are doing. Some people have ethical issues with that. But then there's things like charities and the third sector who are investing a bit of money into docs as well.
what would you hope, if you're a documentary maker and you came here to Sheffield and you had a vague idea and you probably never made a film before, could you get something made by going to the meat market with a decent pitch?
Probably not the meat market, because there's a lot of competition to get places in there, and it's very much reserved for the creme de la creme. But there's lots of other opportunities, like we have speed dating and roundtable discussions, and I very much try and connect people and say, you know, oh, here's this person from this film fund, you should connect with them, and just even if they only get to talk to them for 2 minutes, it establishes a relationship that they can follow up afterwards.
So there's clearly, you know, you mentioned the creme de la creme, and I know Nick Brumfield, Molly Deneen, that sort of, you know, top level documentary maker, Asif Kapadia, will be up here giving talks and the benefit. They'll also be looking for funding and maybe pitching ideas to commissioners. And then you've also got the kind of first timers who are looking in symposiums to get their stuff made. Clearly, it's becoming kind of the place to come for documentaries internationally. Is it becoming like the Cannes of documentary festivals?
I mean, I feel like it would be a bit arrogant of me to say that, but I certainly think that in the last 4 years, in the time that I've been here, I think we've eclipsed a lot of other documentary markets, certainly. And it's, if for UK, for the whole of Europe, I think we're probably the most important place that people can come, certainly for getting funding.
How have you done that? How do you sort of say, well, I'm going to plonk this here in Sheffield and it's going to become so big? What have you done? What's so special?
By not really sleeping for the last 4 years. And I think also by travelling a lot and trawling the world to meet with funders and to meet with filmmakers and say to them, we have this amazing opportunity where you can connect with people one-to-one, where I will introduce you to all these brilliant people, and you know, you will get money, you will have a great conversation, and if these people aren't investing in you, then I'm going to get on the phone to them and say, why weren't you spending money at Sheffield, which is what I do.
There's no yachts here, Tom. No. This is the big shame for me. I'm used to yachts and a bit of sunshine. I got my sunglasses and I think it's peeking through the clouds, so we're all right. But on a serious note, I think what is interesting is that it is a documentary film festival. So often documentaries are a sidebar in a major festival at Cannes, at Rotterdam, even at Sundance. You know, a film wins the documentary award, you know, and it's second to the audience award or the global film award or the feature award. Here it is just about docs, isn't it?
That's right, we're completely about documentary. We're also about factual, in terms of television factual and factual entertainment and the whole kind of big fat gypsy wedding kind of side of things. But it's a real privilege to just be involved in documentary, because I think it's the one genre that is really booming now and getting a massive amount of attention.
It seems to me it's also a genre that is expanding creatively. Fiction features are sort of hidebound by narrative in some way. It seems to me that documentary, in the way it's shot and the stories it's telling and the subjects it covers and in the methods to market, is actually where the experimenting is taking place in films right now.
Absolutely. A film like Bombay Beach that we're showing this year, which is a kind of bizarre circular narrative, and it'll break into these choreographed dance routines, and it's been prefaced by a preparation period of about 5 years where the filmmaker was just hanging out with her characters. And I think it's made this kind of beautiful artistic picture of a kind of lost community, and there is no story there, there's just beautiful characters and amazing scenes.
What's fascinating coming up here, Charlie, is in the old days, documentary, it was fairly obvious what a documentary was. It was kind of good for you. It kind of taught you stuff. It kind of opened you up to the world. There was Humphrey Jennings. They were kind of tender portraits, people. What's a documentary these days?
I think it's so many different things. I think that there's still a real bedrock of classic observational documentaries that the UK's made its name in. I think we're seeing a resurgence in the kind of Jennings cut and paste technique and bringing methods of surrealism into film. I think there's also been a blending with fiction techniques, and having said that, you know, documentaries can be made in a totally different way to fiction. I think that doc makers have learned a lot about how to really tell a story and how to delay surprises till later in the films.
Well, Charlie, I think that's brilliant advice for anyone at the meat market. They've got to come down here, they're going to kind of pitch their stuff, and maybe someone here will get rich. I mean, what's the sort of biggest fund available? I mean, well, how much does a documentary cost these days? Is that like how long is a piece of string?
Yeah, it's very much how long is a piece of string. I think if you're making a TV hour, you can do it for maybe 40,000. But, you know, someone like Morgan or your real upper echelon of filmmakers will be talking about millions and in fiction film territories. Here in the market, no one is going to get millions of pounds just thrown at them across a table, but you might pick up 50,000, you might pick up 100,000. I mentioned the Ford Foundation. They sometimes commit $500,000 just over the table to people.
There are millions on offer, and I hope we'll be talking soon about a project born today in a meeting in a pitch meeting. We can say, well, we were here when it was germinated, and then it hits the big screen and it's a huge success around the world. Like the Sheffield International Documentary Festival has become. Charlie Phillips, lovely to meet you.
Thank you very much. Enjoy the festival.
I'm standing beside a very beautiful looking portable jukebox. I'm pretty appreciative that many of the great Sheffield musicians and bands are probably available on this jukebox, but that was St Saviour's Love Will Tear Us Apart that we heard there, because it features in the film we're going to talk about, Sound It Out, directed by Jeannie Finlay, who's not just the owner of this wonderful machine as well, but the director and creator of Sound It Out, which receives its British premiere here at the Sheffield Doc Fest, having been at South by Southwest in America. Did you take your jukebox with you?
Yes, we did, and it got great reactions on the streets of Austin.
It's a wonderful looking machine, and it obviously is keeping vinyl alive. That's clearly the heart of your film. What is it about vinyl? What made you want to make a film about the disappearance of vinyl and those who are resisting it?
I guess it's a film about how music's important to people and how other people's songs can tell the story of your life. And I kept going in Sound It Out Records, the local record shop where I grew up, and I realised that there was a massive community around this shop and that it was the only one left. It's the only one in a massive geographical area in the whole of Teesside. So I just wanted to make a film about the community that goes in there and how they keep it going and how important it is to them.
Everyone connects to music in some way, perhaps even more than they do with film. They always remember the physical aspect of purchasing music, which of course you don't do now when you download. I remember where I was when I first downloaded a single. No, I was in front of my computer at home. It's not so exciting as actually where you went and bought your first 7-inch. Was yours at Sound It Out?
It wasn't. I used to go to a shop called Alan Fernley's in Middlesbrough, but I can distinctly remember buying the first record with my pocket money and the record that kind of healed my broken heart. Records are important there.
Oh, what was the record, Jeannie? You've got to tell me. I'm like on tenterhooks here.
The record that changed my life was The Smiths' Hatful of Hollow. It just made me think that there's another world out there, outside of the Northeast, and yeah, it's an exciting big world out there, and I think that's what music can do. It can transport you somewhere else.
That's how I get most of my secondhand stock off sort of people like himself. It's always quite heartbreaking sometimes when I have to go, no thank you, even though it's a great album. But it's been well played.
I did used to buy all my records off Tom, but last year I phoned Tom up and said to him, Tom, I need to get rid of my record collection. I need to get rid of all of it, and I need to do it
now.
Totally, I need to do it now. I was pissed, like. He said, yeah, you're pissed. I said, well, yeah. Next morning he phoned me back up. Are you sure you wanted to do that? I said, yeah, definitely want to do it. Reason being, I wasn't listening to any music. I had for two young boys. And so I was just buying the odd piece of vinyl and filling in never-ending gaps that I wasn't even playing, and I just got sick of it. So you came down in a van, didn't you, Tom? And picked up my entire collection, the good and the bad, and there was some bad in there and some embarrassment, wasn't there?
Yeah,
the embarrassing ones, they weren't mine.
Oh, yeah.
I lent them off somebody else. So now I just pop in to try and wrangle a cup of coffee, and I bought a couple of CDs, haven't I?
Bought a couple of CDs.
It seems to me that in a way that there's a kind of a symbiosis between music and film in this way. There's lots of music documentaries here at Sheffield Docfest as well. But there is, you know, there was a period where documentaries sort of died out. They are mushrooming now. There are millions of them around us as we speak. Someone has won a battle and kept the fire burning.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really exciting time to be a documentary maker. I crowdfunded this film, and the volume of support and interest I got from members of the public, 270 people put their hand in their pocket and helped me make this film. It's a great time to be making films, really.
How do you do that? Because, I mean, we're talking to people at the meat market, people are going to go to the BBC for funding or BFI, but crowdfunding, how do you do it?
I knew this was a film that had an audience, and I wanted to try and make it in a very DIY way. So instead of having lots and lots of meetings, I decided to just go out there and make the film, drive up north, stay in the house where I grew up and sleep in my old bedroom.
And do your parents still live there, or is it someone else?
My parents are still there. So, I just started filming it, and after filming for a year, I knew that I could raise enough money through crowdfunding to make the film and make it happen. And we did three campaigns, enough for the shoot, enough for the post-production, and then it funded our trip to Austin, Texas for South by Southwest.
It's very rude to ask, I suppose, but how much does one need to make a documentary?
Oh my goodness, that's a really difficult question. We raised enough, I think that's fair to say. We made enough to make a small and beautifully formed film about a small shop in a small town.
I mean, why I ask as well is because what's the life of it? When you're crowdfunding it, you've got to say to people, well, you know, you'll get a credit as well, and you do see your name on the credit of a film. Very exciting. But where's your film going to be seen? Where can you see this film? Where are you aware that it's eventually going to end up?
Well, initially we thought it would just be a DVD release that we've packaged it like a double 7-inch gatefold single, and it's going to be for sale in record shops, and it's the official film of Record Store Day this year. And initially I just thought that would be the life of it, and then it's kind of blossomed with festivals, really. So we had our world premiere in Austin. It's showing at Silver Docks at the end of the month, which is a fabulous festival. We've got our premiere here at Chef Doc Fest, and it's a joint premiere with Edinburgh Film Festival. And we're also having very interesting talks with the BFI about putting this in, doing a national release.
Jeannie, what's happened to sound it out at the record shop? I mean, you know, you kind of plangently at the end of your film, one kind of fears the worst for it, you know, fears that nothing's going to happen. But presumably now it's probably the most famous vinyl record shop in the UK.
I think it's doing well, it's thriving. There was a point a year ago where I was very worried. I thought the film was going to be about the death of this wonderful shop and the community that'd be left behind. But it seems to be thriving, and now people are kind of making the shop a destination point to go and see the shop featured in the film, which is amazing, really.
And what about Tom, the owner, as well? He must be eternally grateful to you.
I think Tom's a bit bemused and befuddled by the whole experience, to be honest. I went to school with Tom, which is how I met him. We took him out to Austin and we dragged him up on stage for the world premiere. And he's a very shy guy, but he's embracing his newfound fame.
I admire his fortitude when the bloke comes in and wants to buy a Dire Straits Assault and a Swing. And he just says calmly, yeah, it's a job. He goes back and gets him Assault and a Swing. He didn't throw him out Jack Black style.
Everyone's welcome at his shop, whether they're into Makina, which is kind of like nosebleed dubstep made in the Northeast, or if you're into Dire Straits, you're all welcome. Sound it out.
I don't have any children myself. I don't have a partner. And I thought, well, what's the one way I'd like to be thing with my records? And I thought, well, I hope I've been buried with them. And I was actually talking to a friend of mine who's actually an undertaker. And he said, well, do you know, there is actually two or three companies, he said, that can melt your vinyl down, he said, and make it into a coffin. So that's one of my things on my will, is to have my vinyl all melted down and be buried with my vinyl.
Jason, would you like to pick a record from our jukebox? It's all the songs that are featured on the soundtrack of the film on vinyl.
Oh, brilliant. Well, my favourite character is a guy called Shane in it, who's a massive Status Quo fan. I think he's been to see 400 Status Quo gigs. And I love the bit where he's sort of singing along to Status Quo in his bedroom. So have you got any Quo, please?
I've got Caroline by Status Quo. So here you go.
That's the first time I've ever requested Status Quo, and I think it's going to be the last, judging by how that sounded. But thanks to Jeannie Finley for playing me Status Quo and for her documentary Sound It Out, which is bound to be one of the big hits of the Sheffield Documentary Festival this year. Well, Sound It Out is all about product placement of a noble kind, and from there we go to product placement of a more dubious nature. Morgan Spurlock is a big fish here in Sheffield, and this is mainly due to the Big Mac. His film Super Size Me was the breakout hit of Sheffield in 2004, an inventive and highly effective campaigning documentary that cowed an international corporation and established Spurlock's first-person hyper-style of documentary making as a surefire winner. This year, he's back with another big idea, the greatest movie ever sold.
Okay, so in the film, I'll come visit you guys and pitch you about being in the film.
Have you guys ever done any product placement or anything like this?
No.
But now I'd rather know what we get. What do we get?
Sorry, yen?
We're in.
Mini Cooper, official car, the greatest movie ever sold. Are we getting seven?
Spurlock, how are you again?
It's a film.
It's a film about the last vinyl record shop in the north of England.
Oh, wow.
Stand.
Cool.
And they're kind of giving us these things.
That's awesome. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. Do you buy vinyl?
I do not.
No? Do you download?
I
do. You do? That's no good.
I know.
I'm going to get your hands dirty with vinyl.
Listen, I grew up listening to vinyl. And then, you know, like everybody else, then I started getting CDs. Then I started getting then this.
Yeah.
At some point, it'll come full circle, and then I'll just start buying vinyl again.
Good. Well, if you do, go to Sound It Out in Teesside.
Yeah. Sound It Out. That's the name of the place, Sound It Out?
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. You're good? Everything's good? We're going to do it right here? We're going to do the show right here?
Let's do it right here. We're going to keep it real.
Yeah, we're like Mickey and Judy.
That's right.
Of the documentary world. It does bring me to, actually, kind of, you know, a star in the documentary firmament, because it's an odd genre in the way it's changed a lot, whereas in the old days, documentary, it was very dispassionate. And now the documentary, or the way you do it, Morgan, is you're in it. You know, it's very much a branded kind of piece that you write, a kind of first-person essay, if you like, that kind of style of documentary. Did you discover that? Was that very much the kind of idea that you were going to do? Because people have taken it to their hearts. It's worked.
Well, no, I mean, I think it was a complete fluke more than anything. It's when we made Super Size Me, which is kind of where the whole thing came from. You know, the idea originally behind Super Size Me was I was going to have someone else be the guinea pig. I'm going to make the film, I'm gonna somebody else eat all this crap, and I'm just going to shoot it and edit it and make a movie about it. But the more we started talking about it, it literally in the month as we were kind of deciding how we were going to make the film, the realization comes to you that, wow, I can't trust that when that guy goes home at the end of the night, he's not going to be like sneaking some broccoli or bok choy in a closet somewhere. It's like, I don't know that he's going to stick to this. The only way I'm going to know for sure is if it's me. And so that's when I said, fine, I'll do it. To which, you know, my girlfriend hated the idea, but I lived. It's all good. Yeah.
You did. But your face has become a brand for a certain sort of documentary as well. I'm glad to see you haven't changed the spur locks we called these last time. These little bits that you have hanging down.
Yeah. It's getting much grayer now. Now it's like turning into like, now it's looking like, and I'm looking like an old dog. So at some point I think I'm going to have to shave it off. Yeah.
Oh, no one will recognize you. Right. It'll be like those actors who kind of lose all that weight and they never get cast again.
Well, that's the best part. Like literally when I go on vacation, I shave off this mustache, I'm invisible. It's like suddenly it's like, where'd he go? It's like, I'm gone. It's like Superman with his sunglasses, you know, like Clark Kent. Yeah.
Well, he's here complete with spurlocks and a new movie, Pom Wonderful, the greatest movie ever sold.
Yeah.
Right.
Pom Wonderful Presents.
Pom Wonderful Presents. You see, this is confusing me.
It just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? Exactly. It's just so easy. Yeah.
The guys writing your posters, they're going to be really pleased with you.
That's right.
How do you make a documentary about the power of branding corporations without succumbing to the power of corporations yourself?
Yeah, well, I think part of what you see within this film is that the minute you start getting involved with a brand or a corporation is it's not a, you know, 20% chance or 30% or 50% chance, it's a 100% chance that they will somehow corrupt the narrative. It's guaranteed that somehow you will be corrupted along the way. And I think that's what makes the film work, is you see me get corrupted over the course of making the film. You see me have to buy into some of their ideology. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens. You know, it's happening in film and TV in America. It's happening now in TV in the UK. And I think that's what makes the film work, is that we pull back the curtain and it is very transparent. It is very honest about how the process works.
Will people be surprised? I mean, known for Super Size Me, the guy who single-handedly kind of changed the menu at McDonald's. You took on a massive corporation. You stood up against them. You didn't take their poisonous dollar other than into your colon.
Yeah.
To see you now kind of going full vault fast and your next film is... The title is sponsored.
Yeah.
That's surely a game. You're aware of this, Morgan.
Oh, I know. I'm very aware of it. And I think that what you hope is that people understand, you know, the tremendous levels of cynicism that are, you know, behind a title like that and exist within every minute of the movie. That, you know, that there is a fantastic, sarcastic view of how this world is operating and functioning now. Like, literally, you can't go anywhere without it seeming like something's brought to you by a brand. You can't go to a concert. You can't go to a show. You can't walk down the street without so-and-so presents this thing I'm going to give to you now. Yeah.
We're standing here in the Mercure St. Paul's Hotel recording the Guardian Film Weekly podcast. I hope you're aware of that. That said, what's the problem with that?
Well, I think it's not a problem at all if you can maintain some level of real creative autonomy. But the fact is, it doesn't happen. Once the brands start getting involved, there's certain things you can and can't say. There's certain things you can and can't do. Places you aren't allowed to go, whether it be an interview or a film or, you know, stories you can't really dive deeper into. You know, in the United States, you will never hear ABC News say a bad thing about Disney, who owns ABC News. You will never hear NBC put on a story about, you know, Universal or Comcast. Comcast, who now is their parent company, it becomes corrupted. And I think that that's a real conversation to have, especially now. You know, where does journalistic integrity really lie?
This is on a sort of superficial level, and it's quite postmodern the way that you're kind of handling it in terms of filmmaking being funded by filmmakers and your documentary being funded by kind of brands. But for documentaries themselves, how do they maintain some sort of integrity? How do they channel go forward in an age where, you know, all the doors are corporate doors and will be locked to people who, well, like Michael Moore trying to get inside the city to do his last film, his film about capitalism, yeah. A love story. The doors were locked to him. How do documentary makers keep knocking them down?
Well, I think that what will happen is, what I hope is you don't see someone being interviewed in the middle of, like, Darfur holding a Coke. Like, you hope that's not what starts happening. But what you will see happen is, and, you know, there's plenty of filmmakers that have, like, foundations and trusts that are starting to get corporate money to help distribute films. You'll see corporations wanting to align themselves with documentaries. And again, if all they're doing is giving money to help say, we want to support this message, we just want to be behind the idea of a movie like this because it will make them look good in some way, I don't think that's that big of a problem. Because as a documentary filmmaker, you want people to see your movie. You want to get it out there. If it somehow starts to taint the waters of your film, then it's an issue.
Mm-hmm. Talking about the waters of your film, yours is Palm Wonderful Presents. Palm Wonderful is a drink. I had
it is
some.
A delicious watery beverage. Yes.
I had some. I won.
You look very healthy.
Thank you very much. I'm sparkling. I come in. How did you get them? They're aware of the joke now, which is good for them. They look now good because they look like they have some self-irony about their product.
Well, yeah, I think it makes them look very smart and very savvy, as they're being, you know, sued and investigated by the Federal Trade Commission in the United States for false advertising. It's great.
Being sued?
Oh, yeah, they're being sued.
For why?
For basically they're being accused of making false medical claims, false health claims about their product. Yeah, so that's what's happening. So right now, like literally that just came down recently. They're testifying before the Trade Commission as we speak.
It went right through me, if I'm honest with you, if that's any help to anyone. It's a diuretic.
Perfect. It works out great then. No, we came to them. Yeah, they weren't the first beverage we called. Like, if you're going to call a beverage company, the first beverage company you're going to call is Coke. Mm. Coke's number one, Pepsi's number two, then you go down the list, you know, Mountain Dew, Gatorade, da-da-da-da-da. Like, I think Palm was beverage number, like, 39, 42, somewhere in that range of beverages, and we called them up, said, here's the idea, and like, a day later, the CMO of the company called me back and said, we're interested, we want to talk to you about this, and it was remarkable. The fact that anybody said yes to this movie, I'm amazed by every day. The fact that any company said, sure, we'll give you money to take the piss out of our business, why not? It's crazy.
Morgan, it's great to see you again. But just reminded me, of course, your last film that you were here with was Where on Earth is Osama Bin Laden?
Answered that question.
You did.
Look at that.
Did you think he saw that film before he managed to go?
I think it was right at the bottom of his stack of pornos. I think it was the last one in his stack. I don't know if he got to it. He might have been a little busy, but yeah.
It's always funny because documentaries often kind of have an afterlife. They go on, you know, they don't have an answer. But your film is one of those ones that now has an answer.
Now has an answer. We found out he was in Pakistan, literally 20 miles from where we were when we were there. It's pretty remarkable.
You got to the border, didn't you?
We got to the border of Peshawar, and who knew that if we'd have just gone back to Islamabad where we were, you know, just gone north, you know, 15 minutes, we'd have been right there.
Yeah. Probably as a journalist, like, you missed the scoop and all that. It's probably not good to be broadcasting that right now.
That's right. Well, here's the scoop. Everyone else missed it as well, apparently. Yeah.
Morgan Spottler, brilliant to see you again.
Great to see you.
Good luck with your film. Palm Wonderful Presents, the greatest movie ever sold.
Thank you. You said that really well.
We're heading away from the Sheffield Documentary Festival, following this great wall of steel cascading with water that heads from the festival down back to the station in Sheffield. Morgan Spurlock's film kicks off the festival with a big gala tonight. You can see that film when it's released across the UK on September the 2nd, and perhaps we'll be hearing more from Morgan on Film Weekly then. We can't leave you without also offering you up a little something as a memory of our time here at Sheffield. Jeannie Finlay, from whom we heard earlier in the show with her documentary Sound It Out, she's offered us a unique pressing of her DVD surrounded in a 7-inch kind of gatefold pressing. It looks like a 7-inch single. All you've got to do to win that one unique copy is tell us on our Facebook page, Film Weekly Fans, where you bought your first vinyl and what the single was. Very simple. Join us on Film Weekly Fans. Tell us, what your first vinyl record was and where you bought it. The festival here in Sheffield is on till Sunday. It's packed full of screenings and festival talks and pitch meetings. You could make your fortune and your film here in Sheffield. Why not come? Film Weekly will be back in the warmth of the Guardian studios next week. So it's farewell from Sheffield and farewell from the documentary festival. And from me, Jason Solomon, and my producer on Film Weekly, Jason Phipps, it's goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.